What's up, everybody? Welcome back. This is the New Resistance Podcast. My name is Seth, in case you didn't already know. Hey, before we get going, if you're digging what I'm throwing down or have any questions or hate it, want to tell me about it, email d_nrp@yahoo.com. Go to the NR Podcast on Facebook. Also, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, click subscribe or follow so you can be automatically notified when new content is posted. All right. Now, with all of that said, today we are going to talk about doomed fights. Are there things to be learned from them? Is there anything valuable to be gleaned from engaging in a doomed fight? We're going to be talking about that answer to that question and more. But first, let's go back to 1945. The Eastern European country of Hungary. It's post-World War II. Harry Truman, Winston Churchill are meeting with Stalin to figure out where everybody's sphere of influence is going to be. It was a time filled with uncertainty. Nobody really trusts Stalin. And by the way, everybody knew what kind of monster Stalin was before and during the war. It was well known what atrocities he had been responsible for. The Great Terror, actually there's more than one. The liquidation of the kulaks as a class in the 30s. Kulaks, in case you don't know, were prosperous rich peasants. Middle class, basically. Then during the war, for all the abhorrent and unconscionable things that the Nazis did in the Soviet Union during World War II, what the Soviets did on their march through Germany was, well, let's just say their hands weren't clean either. Dividing up Europe meant giving different parts of different countries to the Soviets and to Stalin. And by the end of these meetings, you don't necessarily need to remember this for the story, but it was called the Potsdam Conference. By the end of this conference, Hungary's fate was sealed. They were now part of the Soviet Union. And because they're communists, the Soviets don't do weak, passive power. Just like the leftists of today, they were no different. They get power, and they use that power to get more of it. If you haven't yet picked up on that about the leftist, then it would benefit you to pay close attention. The Soviets immediately locked down Hungary and put in charge a man backed by Stalin, of course, by the name of Matthias Rákosi. Rákosi is in there with his other dirty communists. And with commies in charge, there's always secret police. Well, it's not long before Hungary experiences its very own Great Terror. 1945 to 1949, they moved in and, of course, have to assert their dominance. Remember, communists don't do passive power. And you have to make sure the country that you just obtained is going to be good and communist. And you get to the end, and if you had to break some eggs to get to the omelet for the communist, that's okay with you. So Rákosi has to begin slowly. This is now the era of the videotape and pictures, and it's a lot easier to get knowledge of things happening to the outside world. If those things are terrible, well, you've got a huge problem on your hands. And remember, they still want communism to spread all over the world. It was the same at that point in time as it is today. Communism must take over the whole world, or their bullcrap utopia doesn't work. So they can't afford pictures and videos of them pulling someone's fingernails out, getting to the rest of the world. They're fighting that, number one. And number two, they don't have a ton of money, which is what ultimately brought the Soviet Union to an end. They always struggled with it, even though they tried to hide it. The Soviets didn't have endless resources either. Their economy wasn't anywhere close to ours. And remember that sphere of influence the Soviets had? Well, they wanted to maintain it. So a huge, huge part of their budget goes to the military and the jackbooted secret police. Stuff like that. Holding on to their sphere of influence was of higher importance than things like, material needs of the people, stuff like that. It was really all they had. All right, Matthias Rakosi is installed. From 45 to 49, he digs in. And he does this in part by taking out the right-wing nationalists. They love their country. They had a lot of pride in their country, and they sure as heck didn't want to live under a rotten communist regime. They wanted to be freaking free. And these nationalists were fighters, too. Well, they start quietly disappearing. And it wasn't like a whole group of them at once. It was more like, hey, has anybody heard anything out of Frank lately? No? Well, I guess he's gone then. And I don't want you guys to get the feeling that the Hungarians didn't realize something was up. But you have to remember, at that point, communism was still fairly new on the world stage. There wasn't the knowledge of its evils that there is today. So the people of Hungary, who'd never experienced communist rule, were kind of waiting to see how it was going to work. However, pretty quickly they figured out that all was not right in Hungary. So these nationalists start disappearing. One day you see them at work. Okay, see you in the morning. Except they don't come back. They're never seen again. They weren't just coming in and killing everyone. Yet. No, the commies are persuading some people, bribing some people. This guy over here, he has a business, a family to care for and watch out for. I think we'll go pay him a visit. Maybe slip him a few bucks his way. And if he doesn't want to play ball, well, we may have to up the intimidation a little. Well, hey, those guys over there, they have pride in their country. We can't tolerate any of that. In other words, it meant a bullet to the head. Anything sounding familiar yet? If not, stay tuned. I think you will find it will start to. We'll be right back. Hey guys, I want to take a few seconds here and tell you about an app called Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast. And it's free. And your episodes are automatically made available on most of the major podcasting platforms. Just go to your app store and download Anchor, or go to anchor.fm. All right, we are talking today about the Hungarian Revolt of 1956. Back to the story. This wasn't the Soviets' first go around at doing this. They knew how to take over a country and bring the citizens under their boot. They never could have pulled this off without the powerful, the elites playing ball. Why, you ask, would the powerful people in society go along with a bunch of communists? Well, because it was the easy thing to do. Simple as that. The easiest way to maintain their elitist lives was to just do what the system told them to do. Now are things sounding a bit familiar to you? What ended up pushing the revolt was the people who did not play ball, did not go along. Well, the ones who managed to stay alive anyways, had really crappy lives. While those who did, their lives were pretty good. The Soviets had to show that if you just did what the government, your teachers, if you just did what the system told you to do and say, if you just behaved like a good little commie, life was going to be pretty good for you. Behave, and you could have the nice house, the nice car, all the best foods. Oh, but look at that fella, Michael. He wanted his own thoughts. He foolishly wanted to be free. Now Michael is in prison. In the near future, we're going to be faced with choices. All of us are. We already are. That could either make our lives comfortable or increasingly uncomfortable. We've already had to face quite a bit of it over the past 2 years. Canadians have had to face it over the last few weeks. If you don't go with the program, if you don't submit, your life is going to be very uncomfortable. And like the lions you're fixing to hear about, we can never go along with it. Not to take the easy path. Look, everyone has their own level of fight in their hearts. So, to whatever extent that we possibly can, we must hold the line. Anyways, so Rakosi is the man in charge. It's now 1950 to 1953, it's Great Terror time. Once you've gotten total control with the cinching in period, this is now time for the cleansing period. Over 10% of the Hungarian population was prosecuted. Then executions, gulags, labor camps, and lots of horrific torture. And Rakosi, he loved the torture so much that if he was not present for it, if he was not there to see it in person, he'd force his men to tell him all the details of it. All the screaming. Everything. That's the kind of monster they were dealing with. What a freaking awful nightmare. Then, like all communists and leftists do, we're starting to see it here, eventually they start eating their own. Over half of the Hungarian commies started reporting each other to the AVH. That was the secret police in Hungary. They were getting each other tortured, sent to the gulags, and even executed. When you have a system that is that far gone, you can't save something like that. So to keep from having to admit to yourself, this is so wrong. This system is so evil and broken. You take the easy way out by blaming others. It was a good way to move up in the party. So March 1953 rolls around, and Stalin dies, and Nikita Khrushchev takes over the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union was looking really, really bad to the rest of the world. Stalin had given the Soviets a really bad image. They didn't want to be seen as these evil barbarians. Remember, they want communism to spread all over the world. Well, Khrushchev sets out to change that. But he has a bit of a problem. You see, communism can't succeed without the brutality, the control, the censorship. Communism and brutality go together hand in hand. So they get rid of Rakosi. He was a Stalinist and was just as bad. And install a new guy to be in charge of Hungary. This was going to be a nicer communism. By the way, the guy that took over for him was a guy who worked under Rakosi. Rakosi actually pushed for this guy to take over for him. But this new guy, he quickly finds out that he has to resort to the same things as before in order to enforce the communist system. Word starts getting back to the Soviets. The Hungarians have had enough of this crap. The tension, it's building and building. It's now 1956. Khrushchev begins preparing a plan. It's called Operation Whirlwind. In the event that a revolt broke out in Hungary, and they had to put it down by force. Little did the Soviets know, but they would be needing it very, very soon. The people were very unhappy with the way they were being forced to live. And this is the time period where communism is facing its biggest threat. See, communist rule was still new enough in Hungary that the adults at that time were old enough to still remember what it was like before they were forced under the Soviet Union's boot. But eventually, those people die off. And future generations, all they know is living under communist rule. When there's still people alive that remember what it was like before, that's when it's at its most dangerous time. of being overthrown. And so the Hungarians were absolutely done living like this. A group of college students at the Technical University in Budapest decide they're going to act. October 22nd, 1956, they announce a march for the next day, October 23rd. They wanted to air their grievances. Next day comes, and they're marching through town. Hey, let's air some grievances out in front of the Communist Party headquarters. So they do just that. Just a side note, real quick. You know, there's the saying of every young person is a Democrat until they get their first paycheck. Well, young people across the world, they're the freedom fighters. They don't grow up like that. Okay, sorry. Back on track here. These students had put their grievances into a list of 16 points. Number one was the immediate withdrawal of all Soviet troops from Hungary. Number 12 was, we demand recognition of freedom of opinion, freedom of expression, freedom of the press and radio. They wanted their freedom, and they wanted the Red Army out of their streets. The Soviets had found out about the march beforehand, but they let it happen, but wrestled with how to handle it. Remember, they didn't want that bad image that Stalin had given them. The hardliners, of course, argued, let's just roll in there and kill every last one of them. And others, I'd love to do it, but then we can't be seen by the rest of the world as these monsters. Eventually, the hardliners would get their way. The Soviet Union struggled with that quite a bit. Upwards of 20,000 people start marching. This thing from here forward just gives me chills. There's so many cool things that happen in this story. Word starts getting around that a march is happening. An anti-communist march. An anti-Soviet march. People start coming out of their homes. By the thousands. It's all spreading by word of mouth. Remember, the communists had control of the media and the airwaves. Word of this protest spread like wildfire. Pretty soon, they reached the commies' headquarters. Along the way, they were waving their flags. See, the Soviets had taken the Hungarian flag and put the hammer and sickle in the middle. The Hungarians had taken those flags and cut out the hammer and sickle and were waving those flags, the hole in the middle. You can go online and see pictures of it. They're not done, though. What comes next is one piece of history that, for me, anyways, would have been one of those lump in the back of your throat moments to witness. So wish I could have witnessed it. By that evening, the crowd had grown to at least 100,000 people. They've made it downtown near the Parliament building. It's dark out now, of course. There is a huge crowd. The Soviets They're shocked. They are beside themselves on what to do about all of this. I mean, they've got the AVH officers who've been torturing and killing, but they don't really have the numbers of AVH and Soviet troops to stop this many people. So, they did decide on something that they hoped would work. Sort of a last-ditch effort. They cut the power. 100,000 citizens are out there demanding their freedom. They're waving their flags, their hammer and sickle-less flags, and chanting part of this Hungarian patriotic poem that had been banned by the Soviets in Rakosi 10 to 11 years before. It banned it from being recited in public. Part of it went like this. This we swear, that we will no longer be slaves. They're chanting this, waving their flags, and out of nowhere, boom! Out go the lights. It is now pitch black. So dark, you can barely see directly in front of you. They continue chanting together. Now, communists had their own media outlets. I never found the name of it, but they had this magazine that just proclaimed the glories of communism propaganda. So they're chanting, "We will no longer be slaves." They're waving their flags together. 100,000 people. When all the lights go out, nobody can see in front of them. One young man rolls up his dirty commie magazine, lights the end of it on fire, and holds it up so people can be able to see. Soon everybody is rolling up their commie magazines and lighting them on fire. And you have these torches of freedom lit by people burning the magazines that their oppressors and their torturers had forced upon them. That is awesome. Now the Soviets know that they are in seriously deep, deep trouble here. They mobilize and send 4,000 to 5,000 troops. The march continues and grows even larger. A bunch of the protesters end up at the commie-ran radio station. They wanted to broadcast their 16 points out to the whole country. By the way, from this point on, whether I say protesters or call them rebels, whichever, I'm talking about the same group of people. So a bunch of protesters end up at the commie-ran radio station. They're met with a line of about 200 armed AVH officers versus thousands of protesters. They demand entry and, of course, are denied. Things are already on edge, and being denied entry into the radio station has only made it just that much more volatile. The AVH and the Soviets once again find themselves unsure how to react. They have to walk a fine line. They'd rather the protesters just shut it up. The world cannot find out about this. The Soviets are really afraid of looking too weak to stop any of this. Hey, shut up, you. Oh, the protesters are not about to shut up. So, the Soviets decide, they decide on something that ramps this march up. Ramped it up by a whole lot more than they anticipated. What they do? Well, I'll tell you in just a second, and we'll finish this up. Alright, we're back. This is the New Resistance Podcast, and we're talking today about the Hungarian Revolt of 1956. Let's finish this up, shall we? Now, where we left off was a large group of the 100,000 strong nationalist anti-communist protesters had ended up in front of the commie radio station, and they're not being let in. The commies, they end up doing what they've always been good at. They decide they're going to lie and trick the protesters. Instead of letting the students and the protesters inside, they've taken one of those vans that news and radio stations use to broadcast on location or whatever. And they pulled it up to the students and told them, okay, we've heard you, and we're going to let you air your 16 points from this van. Well, the students were stoked. This is all we wanted this whole time. They begin to broadcast their points. People begin to come out of their homes and are telling the protesters none of that is being played. Nobody is hearing your grievances. See, the Soviets hadn't actually been allowing the students' broadcast to go through. Their noble demands for liberty and freedom from oppression, we're just going into dead air. The regular Soviet propaganda was still playing. It was all a lie. And now the protesters know it. And they begin to storm the station. The Soviets are shooting tear gas canisters into the crowd. Protesters start picking up the canisters and throwing them back into the radio station. Soon the students are being shot at. People start dying. Women, children, everyone start dying. Eventually, the tanks and trucks are brought. Only they're not Soviet tanks. They're Hungarian tanks and Hungarian troops working for the Soviets. There's one commander who, when he finds out that it's Hungarians they've been ordered to kill, he stops and tells his men, "Do not shoot any of them. These are our people. We aren't killing our own people." I know I've got to finish this story up here, but there are so many awesome moments that happened. Some of those Hungarian troops started giving their weapons and ammo to the rebels, the protesters. Or they joined the crowd themselves. There's also a point where the ABH need more ammo and weapons, so they try to disguise the resupply in an ambulance to treat and take out some wounded. The rebels seize the ambulance, steal the guns and ammo for themselves. Then the people just finally finish losing their minds after the new guy, the guy that replaced Rakosi, gets on the radio and blames everything on them and says he's done nothing wrong, that they're stupid and wrong, and they should shut up and go home. They started tearing down statues of Stalin and Lenin and destroying anything that reminded them of the communist occupiers. The communists made them speak Russian. They changed the road signs to be in Russian. All of it. Protesters started tearing down or destroying all of it. It's on now. Khrushchev finally decides it's time to put Operation Whirlwind into full speed. Hundreds of Russian tanks, I want to say like 600 and some. Some places I looked up said 600 and some. Some didn't say at all. It's hard to get an exact number, but hundreds of Russian tanks and thousands of troops. At least 30,000. Tanks roll into Budapest late at night, expecting to find these students that are going to be easily crushed. Instead, they find things like dinner plates laying in the road to look like IEDs. When the tanks stop to check them out, rebels are dropping Molotov cocktails in the tanks from the apartment buildings above them. The rebels are now attacking the Soviet troops all over town. The Soviet troops, they're killing people, yes. But they're not actually just wholesale slaughtering and destroying people. Yet. Word gets back to Khrushchev and the Politburo that the Soviet troops are coming across some brutal things. Some truly very disturbing things. The leaders are saying to the Kremlin, you guys, we may be in some serious trouble here. Do you know what they are finding in Budapest? I'll tell you what they were finding. Hold on.
It's the end of the world and nobody cares. God props the old so nobody stares. After chasing the mirror anymore, a good hard look can shake you to the core. So
do you know who you are? Part of the solution or the one that falls, yeah. Look in your heart.
Pull the pin, be careful where the rapids go.
Hey guys, just a reminder, if you have any comments, questions, or suggestions regarding anything about the show, email the_NRP@yahoo or post a comment at the NR Podcast on Facebook and hit like while you're there. Okay, so the Soviets start finding some things. You know what they were? Remember in the beginning of this story, I said that torture and killing always has and always will come along with communism? It's always the secret police that do it. They're always feared. It's the AVH in Hungary, the Stasi in East Germany. Whether it's politics, business, etc., whatever it is, always be careful how you use power when you have it. As leftist, Marxist, and progressives in this country seem to forget, you're not always going to have that power. Well, those protesters remembered who the secret police and those paid off by them were. This is what the Soviets were coming across that so disturbed them. The protesters would build scaffolding. Sometimes they just used trees. The secret policemen were not hanged by their necks. These guys were tied up by their feet, hoisted up in the air, and were beaten severely, but kept barely alive. Then the protesters were burning them alive. Once they were dead, the crowds would take all of their money and would dump piles of money underneath every policeman's body. No one touched a cent. They left it there. Soviet troops weren't just finding this one or two here and there. It was over and over and over and over. Their secret policemen. Khrushchev took the gloves off after this. It was a massacre. They were very quickly put down, the resistance. The Hungarian Revolt of 1956 was ultimately put down. It was a horrific scene. But tell me, because the Hungarian people finally did get their freedom. The last Soviet troops left Hungary, June 19th, 1991. Tell me, was that whole thing a total waste for those university students? Their 16 points, the march, the revolt. Remember when I was talking about the torches of freedom and starting to really push back? Were you thinking, those people shouldn't be doing that? They're making waves, violating norms. They should have just gone along. Did any of you listening to this podcast today catch yourself thinking any of that? You know darn well you didn't. You were saying to yourself, yes, push back on those commies. Go fight for your freedom. See, it's so hard to see and feel sometimes, but there's value in that. There's value in your kids and your grandkids and your great-grandkids seeing people fight like that. Hungarians who were alive in that day did eventually taste freedom. Don't you dare think October 23rd, 1956 didn't play a part in that. They celebrate it to this day, every October 23rd. Take a look at our great city, our great country, and at how much trouble we are in. Guys, we are surrounded. Talking culturally, we are completely surrounded by the very people who can't stand us or anything we hold dear in our hearts. Can't stand that we cherish America, that we cherish our freedom. Don't get me wrong. If that's how they feel, well, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't mean that we are to stop fighting. Even if Republicans win the House and the Senate this year, if we are down the one Springfield councilwoman who was on our side and fought for us, listened to us, that means we now, more than ever before, even if it's a doomed fight, even if we can't do a thing about it, and even if we ultimately fail at our aims, if for no other reason in this world, then your kids need to see you do it. These younger generations need to see us do it. We have to start changing this next generation. Changing how they think. We've lost the culture war thus far by letting those who hate this country educate our kids. We start now teaching our kids, those who are too scared to speak out against the woke leftists, that there actually are things worth fighting, that there are things worth poking the bear for. We can show people we're in this for the fight, even if we don't see victory in our lifetimes. And I hate to burst your bubble, but it's pretty likely that we won't. But if we do not start taking on and start winning some battles, start taking some ground, then we'll never get our city. We'll never get Springfield. We'll never get our country back, ever. We're just pushing that beginning back further and further. The progressives took them 100 years, 100 years to get where they are today. They started way back when Woodrow Wilson was in the presidency. If we don't start today to push back, we're just pushing that 100 years back further, because it's going to take that long, if not longer, to win the culture back. We have an obligation to do the necessary things today so that our kids and future generations don't have to do those hard things. We have a lot of work to do. Winning back Congress in November, the White House in 24 won't fix anything. We have to change the culture. That's all there is to it. It has to change. I'll end with this. It's a quote from Andrew Breitbart, who died 10 years ago as of March 1st. That's a couple days ago. He said that, quote, "Politics are downstream of culture." So very, very true. All of the trash and the rot this culture has given us all came from how we treated previous generations. What do you say we start right now to change that? Even if it's doomed,
I never learned to give up.
It'll be well worth it.
Challenge my beliefs, I'll choose to stand up.
Hey, thank you guys for tuning in this week.
Overcoming
it really does mean a lot. My name is Seb. This is the New Resistance Podcast.
End,
stay focused, stay engaged. Never give in. Revelation 21, verse 4. See ya!